I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. This show is where we host thoughtful conversations with people across my personal and professional network who possess deep experience, wisdom, and insight about the issues shaping our communities, our economy, and our future. If you value these conversations, then I invite you to support this work. Your donations help us continue bringing together leaders and thinkers who are willing to have honest discussions about our state and our country. Visit lockedin.cash to become a reoccurring supporter. Your contribution helps us continue producing independent conversations that elevate our region. Today's conversation is with my friend Newell Clark, former mayor of Lexington, North Carolina. Newell comes from a family deeply connected to the history and development of Lexington. And over the years, he played a major role in helping guide the city through growth, transition, and revitalization efforts. But what makes this conversation interesting is that Newell is no longer speaking as mayor. He's now observing Lexington as a private citizen, businessman, community member, and someone with a long-term perspective on where the city has been and where it may be headed next. Newell, how are you, man? Thank you for locking in. It's been a little while.
It has been, man. I tell you, you were speaking about your conversations with your business network and friends and people sharing wisdom. I hope I can bring something to the table.
I know you will. I know you will. I've been excited to get you back on. It's
great to see you.
And I know that Lexington has been in the news recently, and we're going to get to that in a moment. We won't jump off there, but I do want to help my audience for those that maybe haven't seen you in a while or maybe don't know much about your background. Maybe just sort of do a little bit of an introduction. But, you know, we're talking about Lexington, and your family has a lot of experience and a lot of history in Lexington, even though you went off and went to college in some other areas. You came back to Lexington to lead the community. And so I just want to start there. I mean, talk a little bit about Lexington and sort of the differences that you see around town compared to when you were growing up as a child and now as a investor, developer, businessman, former mayor, all of the things.
Well, man, thank you for that. You know, I think we all have an affinity to our hometowns, even if we don't live there. There's always those memories of family. And not to go into this, AC, but I dove down into my family lineage and really got into kind of following my family tree. And I actually traced our part of my family all the way back to the 1300s over in Italy. But we have my family, we've been in Davidson County for a very long time now, well into centuries. And it's, but really, I think my family's known for its retail background. If anyone has ever visited Lexington, they've probably spent a little time in a hardware store called Lanier Hardware. And my grandfather started that in 1940, right before World War II. And they've got some tremendous stories to tell there, but it's actually employed up to four generations in our family. I do not work in the store. I work in our real estate business. And that's another thing that my grandfather started. I'm actually third generation in that business. We own and operate and develop properties around Lexington and the area. And it's we've been around. Folks know the Laniers for sure. Got to tell you a little quick funny that my grandfather first election when I ran for mayor, he was calling everyone because of course my mom was a Lanier, and that's why my last name's Clark. Of course, when she married, she took the last name of Clark, my dad. And my grandfather, AC, was calling everyone to let them know that this is my grandson. He's got a different last name, but it is my grandson. And we've worked hard as a family and continue to work and give back to the community because it's given so much to us. And we just feel like service is just a part of our DNA as well.
You know, Newell, when I sit and listen to you, and I know a lot about the history of your family in Lexington, and, you know, everyone in Lexington knows who you are and knows who your family is. And it's just so interesting to walk around town with you when I'm there. But when I think about all of the long connection and tradition that you and your family have to that community, and so many different things that you guys identify with in the community. Like literally your identity and your role and your life is integrated with these things around town. What kind of pressure does that bring to an individual, you know, living and coming up in an environment like I'm describing?
You briefly mentioned about me going off and spending time elsewhere. Folks that know me and know me well, and I know you're aware of this, I did live on the West Coast for about 15 years. And I bring that up because of your question of growing up here, and everyone knows your family and everyone knows you and that sort of thing. You kind of have to act right, you know. You know, as your grandmother would say, act like you got some sense. You know, you, and not that it was, I went crazy or anything like that, but I do, my time in California, there was a freeing, if I'm being honest about it, you know, there was a freeing aspect to that, that, you know, probably one of the things that I recognize more than anything else, anything I accomplished out there, I did on my own. You know, it wasn't my grandfather making a phone call or someone knowing that I was someone's grandson or someone's son or that sort of thing. And in the South, that goes a ways. You know, if someone knows you, you get that opportunity. You know, I would, you know, without question, I've had some privileged opportunities. But that was a huge dichotomy for me, was when I went out West and no one knew me, my family or anything like that. And it's like, boy, you better roll your sleeves up and get to work, you know? And that was something that, and I wanted to challenge. I think that's probably why I took that trip and spent a lot of time living out there, was I wanted to see what I could do on my own and it's interesting because if I really think about it, even back home here, other than those phone calls to voters, I don't know that my grandfather's made a call for me, you know, sort of thing. I still, you know, feel like I've succeeded a lot on my own, but there is a part of that when you grow up in a community, and it's really a level of respect.
Respect your family and the name that you've been able to create. And my daughter was just here recently. I'm celebrating a birthday. I won't tell my audience how many trips around the sun I've made. I'll just let you know that my soul and my spirit is timeless. So I've
been here for a very long time. If you DM me, I'll tell you the number, folks.
Yeah. I've been here for a very long time, and I'm prepared to be here for an even longer period of time. But my daughter came by to celebrate the birthday with me, and you know, she's went off and made a life for herself in Greenville and graduated from ECU, working on a master's. She's working as a clinical trainer now in Wilson. And it was just so fascinating to sit there and listen to her talk about the life that she's creating and what she's excited about. And it wasn't something that I had a tremendous amount of influence over, you know, other than just having influence over her own personal development, but not necessarily, you know, I'm not the one that was making it happen or calling certain people or trying to influence someone to give her an opportunity. She really went out and did it on her own. And I think that has a way of really, truly building character. You know, it just makes one person very strong. I think that if she would have stayed here in Winston, like I wanted to go to Wake Forest, she would have had to operate in my shadow to some degree. And, you know, everywhere she goes, and people say, hey, I know your dad, you know, you got to act right kind of thing. So I think moving away and going through that sort of liberating process that you're describing, I think that can be so helpful to your character development and in terms of who you become. Now, not a lot of people run off from Lexington and go to California. So that's a story in itself. I think we could have a whole episode just around the differences between living in Lexington and living out in California.
Yeah.
When you came back, you decided to run for mayor of all things. And, you know, your family has already done plenty of Lexington. You all have definitely contributed more than the average family or average individual would in any community. What made you want to become mayor of your hometown?
Honestly, a lot of it were the people and the citizens here. When I returned home, like I said, it was just natural. My mother, my grandfather, my uncle, they served on boards and they volunteered and they gave of their time outside of their regular work. And so it's just what we did. And I just kind of did the same thing. I started volunteering and serving on nonprofit boards, and to where I felt like, you know, can I help the community with my ideas, my energy, service, whatever. And it seemed like I would serve on a board for 1 year, and then they'd ask me to chair it or you know, be the president of the board. So people started asking, would I consider an elected position? And I really had not thought about it. And more people kept asking. And I think some of it had to do with being younger. I think they wanted some younger folks involved from an elected position. And you know, the one thing, AC, I think people don't think about this a whole lot because they think about career politicians and they look at Congress and what someone from Congress makes. And they just assume that a mayor or city council or county commissioner makes a lot of money. And there's very little money in it. And so typically small communities or small or mid-sized communities, you tend to get older folks in those representative positions because they can afford to do it. Yeah. You know, they're retired and they've got time to do it. And you look up on a dais at a city council and the average age is 75. Mm. And I was in my 30s. Again, as I said, I was running and operating our real estate business, which afforded me some time that I could give. So my job aligned with me being able to run for city council. And my first election, there were four new council members, and we got younger as a total council by 105 years.
Wow.
And that because most of us were younger when we ran, and you know, Councilman Calicut well, yeah. You know, so, but it really was citizens. They wanted a younger voice and wanted to see where that could take us. And enough people were asking and pushing, and I got the support. And then I'll tell you this for the Triad audience, a long time congressman that folks know is Howard Coble. And yes. Mr. Coble was a family friend, and I actually went to go see him and just say, folks are asking, but I want to be in service. I want to help. What should I do? And he knew me, and he said, well, you like to get things done. That's part of your personality. And he said, then you need to be a mayor. And he said, that's where you can get things done on a local level. And that was one of the things that helped make that decision for me.
Yeah, Representative Coble was an amazing congressman. You know, people may or may not agree with his ideology, but I do think from the perspective of constituent services, he was totally unmatched. And, you know, even in his older years, you know, I saw him performing at a level in terms of constituent services that even a younger congressman would not be able to do. I mean, he showed up to every event that he was invited to. He sort of had this uncanny way of remembering people. I remember sitting next to him at an event that I was speaking at out at Grandover many years ago, and I'd met him before, and you know, I told myself, I said, there's no way possible this guy would remember me. I mean, you know, at his age and the amount of people that he meets on any given day. But when I walked up to him, he immediately said my name and could remember what high school I went to. And he had this, I don't know, I guess you call it a talent or skill. He some kind of way knew the high school mascot at school in the region. I don't know if he just sat around and studied that, but I just always thought he was a remarkable public servant. Again, you may or may not agree with his positions on certain issues or his ideology, but I think he was a hard-working guy. Part of what you became known for, and when I first originally got to meet you through our mutual friend Martha Larson, who was at the time was at Davidson Community College, you were mayor already. I think you may have been in your first term, and was really starting to look hard at downtown revitalization, which, or what you all in Lexington call Uptown. And that has went swimmingly well. I mean, there's been tremendous amounts of progress, not just, I mean, I'm talking about in all pockets of that uptown area. And I want to talk more about that in a moment. But when you look back at Lexington, and now you've been out of office for at least a couple of terms, what are some areas within Lexington that you feel like are still struggling? You know, maybe where there are more opportunities for economic development and leadership and focus, and a lot of what you brought to council when you served?
You know, I think one of the things I had a lot of success with was, and I, this isn't my, this is what I heard other people say about myself. They always said I was the biggest cheerleader for Lexington. And that was, and that was something that I think is important for local officials is, you know, you've got to be positive about your community. You need to speak positively about your community, and you have to share that with other folks. I'm going to tell a quick story. It's, and you help me remember, I'm obviously not Howard Coble here. But the gentleman, when I tell the story, you're going to remember this, but we spoke, you and I spoke at an event that was over in Greensboro. And there was a friend of yours who was also part of that group that spoke. And I was talking about Lexington and kind of a vision of what, you know, was going on with Lexington and that sort of thing. And your friend afterwards said, "What's that guy talking about?" He goes, I didn't know any of that was in Lexington. Is that even there? Whatever. And then a few years later, he came to Lexington and he called you back and he goes, "My God, everything that mayor said is there."
Yeah. You're talking about James Carey.
Yes.
President of the Winston-Salem Urban League.
That's it. Yes, James. And forgive me for forgetting your name, James. My apologies. But it was you've got to let people know, because locally, and I think that works two ways. When you share with an outside community, and I used to always refer to us as a good triad neighbor. It's like, hey, you go to dinner on a Friday night in Greensboro. You might go to lunch on a Saturday in Winston or whatever. I mean, come experience Lexington too. You know, we've got, you know, we can go to all of these places, not just stay in our little neighborhoods. And we needed to be a good triad neighbor. But I think it works on both ends, because a lot of times locals don't discover their own hometown. And one of the things, Jeannie Leonard, former owner of the candy factory in Lexington, she used to say, and she'd been in business for 30 some years, and she would always marvel that people would come in on a Friday and they'd walk in at 6:30 and go, "My goodness, you're open late." She said, how since when have you been open late? And she was like, "For 30 years." And it was locals that didn't even realize she was staying open. So when you are positive about your community and speak of that, so I think that's something we can always continue to do. The current leadership needs to continue to do that, speak positively towards Lexington. Our next biggest hurdle right now is housing. We've got a wonderful quality of life. We're centrally located. There's a lot that we did towards quality of life and giving people things to do, the build out of restaurants and breweries and shops, and really focusing on that urban core development in Lexington, but the surrounding areas as well. We've done a nice job of recruiting large manufacturing and employment opportunities that are not just a job, but they are careers. That I know folks that have started with Edgar and they're moving up through management and creating a career in that, which is so much different than just having a job. So we've got a lot of those happening. But AC, where are people going to live? You know, and we're lacking townhomes, new apartments. We got a lot of single family homes in the Lexington area. So that next little apartment, condo, loft apartments, those sort of things, that type of development is around us as well, as Toyota and Honda Jet and everything else continues to grow and employment, and people are seeking that North Carolina affordable experience. If we don't have that, people come and they look and, oh, Lexington's cute and quaint and we love the hometown atmosphere, but I want a new apartment. They're going to go to High Point. They're going to go to Winston. They're going to go to Salisbury. They're going to go to Greensboro, and we're going to miss out on that opportunity of growing through the opportunity of housing. So, we've got to pay attention to that. And along those lines, A big part of that is you'll hear a lot of people talk about affordable housing. I think for Lexington, they should focus on areas of workforce housing, housing that teachers can afford, that firemen and police can afford, and then also executive housing. You know, you want that upper management to be able to come in that has disposable dollars that they can spend in your community. So it's not just one or the other. It's looking at housing across a broad spectrum.
Yeah, I think that's a challenge right now for every community in North Carolina, because North Carolina is growing at such a rapid rate. We're sort of the victims of our own success. So many people want to be here, whether it's because of our quality of life or our lower cost of living or job opportunities that are moving into the region, especially here in the Triad area or the Carolina core, where we've seen tens of thousands of jobs being announced, which I think all of that benefits Lexington, because everyone's not going to live in Greensboro or High Point or Guilford County. They're going to live throughout the region and commute back and forth. And so I think every community, every city right now is struggling to figure out how to get more units on the ground, how to diversify their housing inventory between apartments and single family rentals and townhomes and all the various types of units that you need to have available for your residents. So, you know, I think that's going to continue to be an issue that we talk about across the entire state of North Carolina. I really believe that this can continue to be an issue for the next several years, 5 to 7 years. And if we don't figure it out, we could actually end up repelling some of the success and some of the attraction that we've created for ourselves. So I think it's incredibly important that we do get it figured out, Newell, not only just for Lexington, but for the whole state of North Carolina. You are working on a housing project in the area. As I stated earlier in our conversation, you're an investor. Full disclosure, he's an investor with me. He's a member of our Northridge Opportunity Fund and a member of our newly created advisory board. We appreciate your service, Newell. And you've looked at several things and several projects around Lexington. I know you and your family own several buildings in the Uptown area, but you also are developing some apartments. Now, I haven't been down to Lexington in a little while, but I heard from you recently that you all have already broken ground on those.
Yeah, we have. It's interesting. You speak of my family, and one of the things that my grandfather kind of always did was he just kind of operated, I'm going to say, in his own bubble, but he just kind of did it all on his own. And today's world, with the expense of way things are, a lot of times you look at a project and you've got a partner and collaborate. And honestly, you know, we could say that across the board. You know, I mean, cities need to collaborate with counties. Counties and cities need to collaborate with the state. State and counties and cities need to collaborate federally. So politically, we need to do that. Within relationships, we need to look more of understanding and collaborating. We can't do it all ourselves. And I'm just sharing that with you because that's a new thing for our business. We've actually partnered with some other investors that have done some development here locally as well. The Warford family has done some historical restorations here in Lexington. So we've partnered with them and a few other folks to do an old textile mill that we owned. And we've had it for, good gosh, we've had it for a very long time. My grandfather got it at auction, and it's just kind of set there. And we were, what can it be? And, but we are in the process of converting that old textile plant, which is near the Uptown area, in Lexington. It's down in what we call our Depot District. It's near our amphitheaters, near Holland Brooks, which is an event center. There's a barcade down there called Short Circuit. Now there's two breweries, Bull City Cider, Goose and Monkey. A lot of activity going on around there. Farmers markets down there. Southern Lunch is a restaurant. But we're now bringing up and supplying that housing, and we're restoring the old textile plant that used to be Edgewood Apparel. So there's a lot of, you know, the community's excited because people work there now, seeing the building come back to life. So there'll be about 34 apartment units there. Be kind of a loft style. And then we've got about 2.5 acres that'll be phase two that we will build out new apartments, and those will be new builds. So once we finish phase one, which we're in now, we'll move over to phase two, probably the latter part of next year, and start building out. So after it's all done, we'll have well over 100 units in the Uptown area of Lexington that are new builds. And So we're excited to provide that. And to your point, you know, AC, as a mayor, you know, you talk about these things of this is what the community needs and we got to do this. And then you become a private citizen. You're like, well, I better put my money where my mouth is, you know? And it was like, you know, folks, this is an opportunity we've got. So I'm enjoying it. It's also a project talking about collaboration. We're doing it through the state. That plant was part of, we put it into the brownfield program. We were able to secure some tax credits that way. And that helped us make the numbers work as we started doing the project. But we're real excited about that. We're hoping that middle of next year, it'll come online. And we're already people calling wanting to lease them. And it just puts you right in the center of Lexington. Eventually, the depot will, the train station will be nearby. So it's connecting folks to the metro areas, but walking distance to Main Street. And it's a really, really fun location. We're glad we're fortunate enough to be able to do it.
Well, congratulations. I know that I met with you and your partners years ago. So you've been working on this for quite some time, and always like to remind my audience that the projects that you see happening in your backyard and in your communities and cities, those projects take a long time to manifest and bring to fruition. And if you're a real estate developer, you have to be very focused and patient and just sort of roll with the punches. So I know you've got to be excited to finally be at this point in this moment where you can actually ride down there and see activity and see things happen. And so I've got to make a special trip to Lexington here soon. There's so many people I need to get down and to catch up with, and you included, and would love to see the progress you're making on your project, as well as Michael Tesh, who I haven't seen and talked to in quite some time. And I know that he's had a lot going on in the uptown area, and just there's just been a lot of growth happening. But at the same time, there's been a lot of growth. You guys also had a bit of a tragedy recently. There was a fire that sort of destroyed a number of businesses and properties in the uptown Lexington area. Other businesses like the Candy Factory that you mentioned a moment ago was severely harmed. I think Main Street Deli was severely harmed. From my understanding, Shoto, the Japanese restaurant, was pretty much destroyed. So I think they're totally closed. What was the initial reaction, Newell, just from around town, you know, about the recent fire and some of the devastation in uptown?
Well, just like in any small community, the very first initial reaction was anyone harmed, anyone. And we were so fortunate, AC, that the police and fire, everyone was safe. As far as that, it happened so late at night, the buildings were all vacant. So the damage was material. It was not any loss of life. So we were so fortunate of that. But truly, we lost an entire block. Now, if you drive by there right now, one, you won't be able to drive by it because it's barricaded off. But as you stated, the Candy Factory, Shoto's, Bagels on Main, Main Street Deli, and I can't speak enough of how those businesses were such an anchor block for Lexington. People came from all over to visit this candy store. Give you a few monikers on the store. Food Network magazine named it one of the top 50 candy stores in the nation. It named it the number one candy store in the state of North Carolina. So, you know, I would think Food Network knows a little something about that. But constantly it gained press. People would come from everywhere. It was a way of life in Lexington to go to the candy store and buy gifts and graduation presents and Valentine's and Mother's Day and Christmas and it's just what you did. And if someone came to visit, that's where you took them. And it was built in 1890s, and it was Lexington Hardware originally. Give you a little backstory. My grandfather, at one point, we owned the building and bought it from the family that started Lexington Hardware. And back in the 60s, my grandfather ran an Ace Hardware store out of the old Lexington Hardware store. He sold the building to the family that turned it, and that was back in the late 70s. And so most of us, a generation of us, if you're Generation X or later, you grew up with a candy factory on Main Street. And it's, I can't speak long enough words to say what that store meant to this community. Then you look at Jimmy and Daniel and the family that operated Shoto's. They've been in business there since early 2000s. I think they just celebrated 25 years, long-standing, hardworking family. And it was brother beside brother with mother and dad. I mean, their whole family worked there. Everyone knew them. And they were so philanthropic with the community, always giving of their time. Most recently, when it was gained a lot of press when the monks were walking their walk from Texas all the way to DC, and they came through Davidson County in Lexington. And when they got here to Lexington, Daniel and his brother fed them. You know, Shoto's was right there. I mean, they're just wonderful, wonderful people. Tanya, who operates Bagels on Main, she's about 5 years into her business and hardworking and our only bagel shop in town that we had. And then you got Main Street Deli that was a third generation family operating that. The Hearns had been involved with that. Again, anchor business. Generations of Lexingtonians grew up going there, having their roast beef sandwich that they made, their homemade bread for lunch. It meant so much to the community. The reaction was, I'm serious, AC. People were crying. I mean, just tears. It just so many memories. And there's the candy store had a particular bag. And people traveled the world with this bag, and they would take their picture in front of the pyramids, in front of the Eiffel Tower, just all over at Niagara Falls, you name it. And those pictures were all over the wall of where people had traveled the world with their memory of their hometown. And it's truly devastating. And I can't use enough strong adjectives to say what it means, because when you have such an anchor block that draws people to your community from out of the community, gone, total yep. losses, you start to think. You remember, because I know you know the owners, Brooke and Tammy with Brooker T's, that bought Cafe 35 from Mark and Linda back in the day. They bought that about 4 or so years ago. Within their first year, they had a fire. Cafe 35, which became Brooker T's, was an anchor restaurant. Well, it's been 4 years and it's yet to open. They're still working on it. And it's not even to the loss that some of these buildings are. But just to give you a quick kind of put a bow on this in a way, what we're dealing with right now is it structurally sound? We have an entire block right there on our main street that's blocked off and you can't pass through there. We're determining whether, and I say we as if I'm still there, the city is determining whether the facades are safe. Can we allow traffic to come through there? Is there a possibility to rebuild? Is there historic tax credits available to preserve the historical the skeleton of it, the external part of it? Because the insides have just been totally lost. And
yeah, it's really unfortunate for sure. I'm about to run out of time, and certainly, I do recall Tammy and Brooke and their newly opened restaurant. I think I was able to eat there once, but before they had the fire, and I wasn't really sure at this point if they were trying to still get reopened or if it was just sort of a lost cause. I hadn't really gotten any good intelligence on that one way or the other, but I do know it has been an extended period since that fire occurred. And I think for people that are listening, I think that's a clear message of just how destructive and disruptive something like this can be. And, you know, even if it happens within a larger community like Winston, Greensboro, High Point, it can be, you know, severely disruptive. And I think when it happens in a smaller community such as Lexington, you almost wonder if people will come back from it. And so I think it's going to be really important for the neighbors and the residents down there to come together, which I know they already are. I've seen some really great posts online, and people are raising money and trying to support and help not only the owners of these businesses, but the actual employees. And then I've learned that there were people that were living above these businesses too. So there was some residences down there that also got impacted. So I would ask my audience, you know, just continue to pray for Uptown Lexington, pray for the residents of Lexington, that they can navigate through all this and be able to recover, because it was a lot of devastation and loss. You know, I've got time for one more question, then I've got to let you go. I do want to tell you that our good friend, former mayor of Clemens, John Boss, is watching, and he wanted to say that he loved Ardale, which is your grandfather. So just to put that plug in.
Thank you, Mayor.
Here's my final question. I always like to ask this because I'm a huge supporter of the hospitality business. I love our food and beverage community. I don't care what city I'm in. I just love what they do at locally owned restaurants and breweries and cafes, and just the entrepreneurship that's involved to sustain those kind of businesses. So here's my question, my last question of our conversation. What's one restaurant that you'd recommend in your hometown?
Oh, well, I'm glad you didn't say which barbecue restaurant would I recommend.
You'd get in trouble with that one for sure.
Yeah. And what I would do with that is I would tell you they're all good, and then I would start telling you which ones have, you know, which one has the better barbecue soup, and which one has the better barbecue chicken, and which one has the better barbecue sandwich. I would give you, they're all good in their own way. You know, man, I'm gonna throw something new out there to you that you might not know about, because, you know, you and I are always going to talk about John Wilson and the talent that he is at Sophie's Cork and Ale, and we love him and love going there, and he's doing great. You know, Chef Curry over at the what's Lulu Seafood, Chef Ronnie at Humble Plate. I mean, we can just go through a whole list. But there's a new place that's opened up called the Floating Goat.
And I've heard of it.
This, and it's a brewery, and so it was a former fire station. It's just down from Humble Plate, and but they're doing pizzas and salads and appetizers and that sort of thing. But it's just the overall collective of going with your family. It's very family friendly. You know, most breweries, they're not bars, you know, when you go to them. And we went recently, had the pizza. It was fantastic. I had a few appetizers, are really good. And it's just a new offering in Lexington that I tell folks to go check out. But the Floating Goat, it's also another fun little brewery name down here in Lexington.
Well, you heard it here, folks. If you find yourself in Lexington, go check out the Floating Goat. Or if you make a plan to find yourself in Lexington, especially if you're here in the Triad area, it's probably only about a 15 or 20 minute drive from wherever you are. This has been another episode of Locked In with Algernon Cash. I appreciate former Mayor Newell Clark for sitting down for an honest and thoughtful conversation. These discussions matter because communities are shaped by relationships, experience, and the willingness to reflect openly about both successes and challenges. If you value these conversations, then I invite you to support this work. Your donations help us continue bringing together leaders and thinkers who are willing to have honest discussions about politics, business, money, and the community issues most important to our state and country. Visit lockedin.cash to become a reoccurring supporter. Your contribution helps us continue producing independent conversations that elevate our region. You can also subscribe to my podcast on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. Share this episode and send it to a friend. I'm Algernon Cash, and until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.